The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon, and welcome back. Today's Friday, 30th day of March, 2012. Quick look at the numbers. Dow up 56 points, S&P up 5, comp up 2.5, gold up $9. It's all green on my screen. Silver's even up 25 cents. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
Oh, and before I forget.
Yes.
Sam, if there's any way possible I could give you back those 15 minutes, I would. No. I would.
Oh.
Anyway, just a little private joke between me and Sam. Hope you got it, Sam.
Sam. Is Sam in here?
I have no idea. Maybe he'll listen to the podcast later, if he has another 15 minutes to spare. Now, JT and Israel, okay, let me make a broad statement so you'll all understand. If you sign up for the free trial, Friday morning after the live trading room has already started, if I send you a link at that point, it gets confusing for you because you pop in, you catch a few minutes, you don't get any kind of an explanation about anything, and then the process really begins again on... And I could. I mean, I could just send it to you so that you know I've received your request. What I'll be doing is shortly here, I'll be setting the link up for next week. I will be sending that out to you. So for you guys who have signed up for the free trial today, within the next couple of hours, you'll get the link for the live trading room next week, okay? And that will open at the bell on Monday morning, okay? And it's 2 hours a day, 5 days. You don't have to start on Monday. You can start any day of the week. You can start any time. It's just that today I got like 3 requests in when it was really just too late to even... By the time you clicked all the buttons and went over here and did the registration, that would have truly been a waste of your 15 minutes. And I don't want to do that. So you'll get a link later today that will give you access all next week. You've already got the link to download the platform, to get your indicators installed. You got the toll-free number to call if you have any issues, you need a little help getting things set up. It's right there in that email you received, 866-928-3310. You also have mine and Michael's phone number there and the email address support@cfrn.net. If you need any help at all, let us know. Reach out. We'll help you. And it really is a good idea to begin a free trial on a Friday because it does give you a full weekend to tinker around with the platform, to get used to the charts, setting them up, doing all the different things. Because if you've traded for any length of time, we all know that going from one platform to another platform can be, what do they call that, a major life event? Is that what they call that?
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. Major life event. Because you're used to looking at things a certain way, and now all of a sudden, it's all different. It really isn't. It's really all the same. It just looks different. And the beauty of it is our platform is very customizable. So if you're used to trading against a yellow background, you can make that happen. If you like bars instead of candles, you can do that. You can make our charting platform look pretty much exactly like your old charting platform. However you had that set up, you can configure this. And that's why having the entire weekend to tinker with it and mess with it to get it to where your eyes go, oh, I recognize that. That is the S&P 500 E-mini futures. Oh, okay. See, and then by Monday, live trading room, you're... Now, again, doesn't mean you can't come in on a Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday, because you can, and you'll still get 5 full trading days in the trading room. It's just in that final hour on Friday mornings, it's tough. So, anyway, I'll get you guys a link. Go ahead, get your platforms downloaded. If you have questions over the weekend, reach out. The toll-free number, those guys are not in the office, but Michael and I, you can reach us on the 415 number or support@cfrn.net. Okay, yesterday as we were leaving the radio show, put this little circle in right here and said, if the market's going to move higher, allow it to at least show its hand, which it did, on this candle right here. And so buying the open here of this candle made for a very nice trade from 93 up to 99. It's about a 6-point move. Because you had the red MA1 overhead and falling, and you had a weekly trading zone overhead right here. Okay, remember, these are areas. Okay, came down, spiked down below that area, made its turn. Okay, pretty convincing. Okay, now, where do you put a stop on something like this? Well, if you're trading it off the hourly chart, you got a couple of options. You could put it, you know, you could put it below that low, but as most chart technicians will tell you, it probably should go right there, below that low, you know, perhaps even a little farther. Okay, what if you want to do it a little differently? How could you do that? Okay, You've seen it break strongly above the weekly trading zone. You've seen it get on the backside of the MA1 with conviction. And you're staring at the open of this candle at 1330 on March the 29th. Let's go look on a smaller time frame and see what that looks like. What time did I say that was? 13 who?
1339, I think you said.
Thirteen thirty. That's when the candle opened. Correct?
Correct.
Yes. Okay.
Correct.
Okay, 1330, what do we got? Let's go find 1330. Okay. Here we on this is the 10K. We get a bullish cross way back here. Okay, before that hourly candle closed, we literally had a buy signal. Right. Well, see here, you're pressing into the zone, so you probably want to get on the other side of the zone. This pullback right here. Boy, that was probably what might one tick off.
Yeah, about a tick it looks like.
You might have missed that entry by one tick. Let's blow it up. The low of that candle was 92. And it looks like, yeah, if you'd have been rounding that up to 91.75. Okay, guys, here was the entry. And using our rule set, you'd have missed that entry. Potentially by one tick. Now you may have entered on some other chart. You may have gone in on a 2100. Let's see what that looked like. Let's go back to yesterday. When all my troubles seem so far away. Alright. I said that was 1330?
Yes.
Okay. Alright. On a smaller time frame. I don't have the zones on here. What's the zone for this area?
1400.
No, okay, I need to be way down here.
Oh, the next one down. Okay, yeah. Hold on. Let me get that for you. 1391.
Okay, 91. I just want to throw a line across here because we're not going to trade into the zone no matter what time frame we're in. Okay. All right. So we have a bullish cross, we get above the zone, and now right here, you don't miss this if you're trading the 2100 pullback. You get an entry at 1392. Now when we enter on this, even though we're basing it off of an hourly time frame, which is big, so getting in at 1392 got you in right about here, okay, rather than risking all the way back down to here, because you're entering on this time frame, your risk is 2 points. And you had, if you rounded that up, you had one tick of drawdown, and you participated in this entire rally, or as long as you chose to stay in, or you took 2 points, or however it is you roll, okay? And then, end of the day, we go sideways a bit. The Asian open, we get a spike. We rally overnight. What kind of news did we have this morning, Mike? Did we have any? Okay, Mike's not playing anymore.
Oops, my mic's off, sorry. We had a bunch of things. We had University of Michigan consumer sentiment and inflation expectations. We had a bunch of things like that. I'll tell you exactly what it was. Just give me a second. Let me bring it up here. It was all kind of odd times, too. Pre-market, we had core PC, price index, personal spending, personal income. And at 9:45, we had Chicago PMI. at 9:55. We had University of Michigan consumer sentiment and inflation expectations. That's what we had. It was a mixed bag, the news altogether. PCE price index came as expected. Personal spending was up. Personal income was down. PMI was down. Consumer sentiment was up. And inflation expectations were just a little lower than the prior report. That is what we had for news.
All right. So, anyway, that news sent us down back to the zone at 1399, 1400. Okay. Remember all the time we spent at that zone earlier in the week. Okay. Resistance yesterday afternoon. We finally pushed through it. As you go into Globex. And then we come back to it this morning. And on the hourly chart, you can see that we spiked below it. But we never closed back below it. At least not yet. We now have the red MA1 overhead and falling. And so price can either take us lower. We'll watch this. See what kind of an indication we get. See if we come back down here for support. By end of today, we should see 1400 or 1408. That's what I'm looking for.
And that was 1400, 1408. Yeah, okay. All right.
All right, Mike, it's all yours. The screens, the mic, everything.
Let me grab it. I will grab it. Hang on, I'm trying to grab the charts, but it does not seem to be letting me. I think I really need to reboot here. But, here we go. Now I have the opportunity to grab the charts. All right, so everyone should be seeing my charts right now.
Yep.
Good. Very good. All right. Here we go. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is March 30th, Friday, March 30th, 2012. We are going to go over a whole bunch of things this morning. Yesterday we showed the CF Slingshot indicator, which is a new indicator that we've shown. And today I'm going to show you a few things about it. And I just loaded things up right there. It just reset a whole bunch of things on me. But nevertheless, I'm going to show you a whole bunch of things with it. We did not trade any YM trades this morning. We didn't trade any NQ trades, and we didn't trade any ES trades. We made a whole bunch of Russell trades based on something we were looking at from last night's partners meeting. Unfortunately, the market didn't agree with me so much. I missed the morning session where we could have been up about 50 ticks in the first half an hour on the Russell, 50 ticks per contract. And I'll go over that pretty quickly. But then by the time I did jump in, it was right inside all the news events right here. And I lost three in a row right there, got a break even right there, lost another one there, missed about three or four winners right here. Made a mistake, so I ended up getting beat up in the morning session. But that said, I'll go through all the setups. The YM, we did not get a setup. I was looking, trying to enter the YM here after. Well, there was one possibility right here, but I missed that one. I was focused on the Russell and answering questions about the new indicator. And we had a bullish cross here. I was trying to follow the BBC up with the bullish cross. I kept moving my order up, but I never got filled. It finally appeared. You know, this is right now, actually. It was our first pullback after that bullish cross. So the entry would have been right in here on the YM 500 contract. Okay. I'll show you the Russell really quickly. Now, this was something that we went over in last night's partners meeting based on input from a partner. Now, I know that the partner that trades this does well with it, and this is something that we've been looking at and doing to some degree for a while. Now, had I been able to be here, been present for this part of the market right here, we would have been looking to go short right here, for 10 ticks, long right here, for 10 ticks, short right here, for 10, short right here, for 10. Long right here, I don't think that one went 10. And short right here. So the one that didn't go 10, we would have gotten plus 1 on. Short right here for 10, long right here. And that brings us to 9:54. I think in that time frame we had 5 trades that went 10 ticks and 2 that would have been a plus 1 tick for plus 52 ticks, I believe. Then came the whole news event thing, because the news events actually started right here at 9:45. And then there was another one right here at 9:55. This was my first trade. I went long right here, and it stopped me out. I missed the short trade right here where I would have made the money right back. I went short right here. I didn't hold on to it long enough. That gave 10 ticks. I went long right here. It stopped me out. I went long right here. Got 1 tick. I went long right here. Stopped out. Missed the short. That went 10. Well, it actually, I would have gotten a plus 1 tick on that. Missed this short. That went 10. Took this short that reversed, took this long that reversed, took this short that went 10, made a mistake right here, this pink one, missed this one right here, that went 10, took that one, and that one, that didn't work, took that one, that did work. Now all these ones that don't work, the risk is 8, and all the ones that do work, the profit is 10. I think I took 1 tick on this one right here. And then during the break, I put a lot more contracts on just to get back to break even. And I did. I went long here. I went short here. And so after the initial morning session, I was down. I was down about 3 points or 30 ticks. But in a couple of trades, just with more contracts, so I don't recommend everyone do that. I'm looking for my DOM right now. Where the heck is it? Here it is right here. We got back to break even on the morning. Okay. But I had more contracts on to get myself back to break even. Let's see. I took a gold trade. I want to show you the gold chart. All right. And The reason for taking the trades, I'll show you this on the new slingshot indicator. Right here, we're looking for all 3 of these lines to turn down. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to change this so that we're not showing any cycles on it. Just give me a second here. That's my plan, anyway. Change it so that the S3 cycle is off and the S2 cycle is off. Okay, now what we're looking at is for periods where all 3 of these lines go down and price closes below everything or above everything. That's what we're looking for here, and that's what we were also looking for with the gold. Now let me bring up a gold chart. If I can find a gold chart. And here it is. Where did that show up? Hang on a second. I will find this gold chart. Oops. Well, I'm not wasting any more Sam's time, am I? Let's see. Oh, here it is, way over here. Okay. The gold chart. It was buried over there. Now, the thing that we're looking at, same stuff, same exact thing. If you look down here on the bottom one, you know, let's just minimize these, okay? And focus on just this one right here. Same stuff with all the lines going up. You're looking for the move up. Now, I did take this long trade right here, and I got, what did I get? 4 ticks out of that long trade. There was my gold trade. That was the one trade that I took on gold this morning. I got 4 ticks out of that, but you see the same stuff. Right here, you're looking at all the lines going down and all of these going down. Over here, you're looking at all the lines going up right here and price closing above everything. Over here, you're looking at all the lines going down, price closing below, all the lines going up, and price closing above. Now, gold is a pretty emotional market, just like the Russell seems to be. today the gold was a much better trader for this than the Russell was. If I had gotten in there early on the Russell, then we would have been fine. There wouldn't have been any issues. But because I got in when I did, I ended up really having to work this morning. But here is what we're showing you. Okay, now I just put a whole bunch of arrows on there. What I want you to notice about this is that down here, now I'm going to take this, I'm going to take that cycle off of there. There. All the lines are going up. Oops, over here. All the lines are going up when it goes up. Hang on, let me put that in the right place. All the lines are going up when it goes up. All the lines are going down when it goes down. That one's in the wrong spot, too. Over here, all the lines are going up when it goes up. Over here, no, okay. I have a couple more on there. This is the one that I actually took right here this morning. All the lines are going up. Over here. I've got to slide it over a little more. All the lines are going down. Right in here. All the lines are going up. Okay, you guys get the picture? That's pretty much what I'm trying to... pretty much all I'm trying to show you here. Now, this is... this is a relatively new indicator for us, but all the concepts with the indicator are not new. It's stuff we've been working with. I just made everything easier for everyone to see by putting it all into one place. Eddie, the weekly trading zones are something that comes with us. That's active partners get it, and trial folks get to see the weekly trading zones, and active partners get weekly trading zones delivered every Monday morning. Okay? From us. Now that was gold. I want to show you guys the NQ as well. Now on the NQ, this was a slingshot from yesterday. I didn't change this chart around any from yesterday, but I just want to show you how much opportunity there was with that. You know, we had the double divergence this morning. The slingshot right here gave a long right here, closing above everything with the divergence again right here. What I'm trying to point out here are these little opportunities right in here. After the BBC gets tested and price keeps moving up, over here, let's see, I'm looking at the divergences we could look at it on the slingshot, but I'm looking at it here as well. These lines right here are all included in the slingshot if I turn them on. But I'm looking at the closes, or these crosses right here, like this. Okay? And the moves up, and the moves up, and the moves up. And if we go over here, we can look at it in the opposite direction. On the bearish divergences, like this one right here, and here, and here, and here. All these bearish divergences and price moving down and down and down right there. Okay, after you get this cross right in here, right, that's what I'm trying to show here on the NQ. Okay, so I've showed you now gold, which is new. The NQ, I haven't shown the 60. I didn't even look at the 60 this morning, guys, to be perfectly honest with you. I never even looked at it. I was trying to focus on the Russell, and then once I started getting beat up a little bit on the Russell, I was really focusing on it. But I'm going to slide that over here. For what it's worth, one of our partners who was looking at this stuff on the gold this morning, the same setups we were doing on the Russell, by 11:30 my time, there were 24 winning trades for 10 ticks, which is 240 ticks, or $2,400 for $2,400 per contract. There were 3 losses for 8 ticks, which is $240, and 2 break-evens. So the net on the morning, excluding commissions, would have been about $2,000 if you managed to take all those trades on the gold, okay, for 10 ticks each. Now, obviously, you would have had to have been right on top of it and taking all those trades. Now, there's, I can't say that you would have made that much money. But you would have had nice winning trades and a very high probability of wins. There were, what did I just say? There were 10 wins or 24 wins. 24 wins and 3 losses. So somebody can do the math on that and figure out how much that is, what percentage that is, 3 divided by 24. That is 87.5% win rate. That's pretty good. Anyway, that's just a moment in time. You know, you have to go and actually do your own analysis and research on it. But we will give you the indicators, and we'll give you the setups, and you guys can take it from there. Let's see. I didn't go into the whole thing about CFRN, and if you have not taken the CFRN trial, you get to see all these indicators for a week. If you want to take the trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. That's APPLY. And you will get access to all of the indicators that you see here and all the charts and data feeds that you see here, and even more data feeds than what you see here, for that matter. So if you have not taken that trial, get out there and do it. If you are on a trial and you're interested in becoming a partner with us, you know, if your trial is about to expire, give me a call. You should have my phone number from the email that I sent to you. And if you did not get the email, you can email me directly at support@cfrn.net. That's support@cfrn.net. Okay. Let's see. What markets did I have? I didn't really look at the ES all that much. Dwayne covered the ES. We didn't do any trades on the ES this morning. I looked at the YM. I didn't even cover the 6E this morning. The NQ, I went over that. Gold. Russell. That's it. I think we're going to wrap it up. Does anybody have any more questions? Edward, I answered your question about the weekly trading zones. They are part of they're part of our package. Okay, they come with the CFRN.net package. All right, I'm going to stop the recording here. There. All right, recording All right. is stopped.
Okay. You know, I'm often asked why we're so wildly successful. And I think you just kind of said it all in that people can come in, go to our website. They can go to that page you mentioned, cfrn.net/apply. They can take a free trial, and they get live charts, live data, and they actually get to use the indicators for an entire week before they make a decision as to whether or not this style of trading is actually for them. Would that be correct?
That is absolutely correct. And
I'm scratching my head right now. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, caller. I was just going to say there's so much opportunity for everyone. You know, what I do in the live trading room, you know, I'm usually answering questions and doing 5 or 6 different markets at the same time. But if a person were to take, for instance, the NQ, you know, let's just look at the NQ. Some of you guys like the NQ, some of you don't. I don't trade the NQ all that often. Not because it's bad or because I have any bias against it. I just haven't. I just never have. But the opportunities are there. You look for the bearish divergences, you know, these double divergences right here, across down. And now you can look at all this in one place if you want to. It may be clearer to look at some of it right here like it is, but you can look at it all in one spot. I can just quickly get all this stuff, all this information up here on these top two, I can put right down here in the bottom one. And I mean, just look at it. It's a fairly decent trending market. Now you can see over here we have a bearish divergence here and here and here and here. And we dropped off the BBC there and there. You know, there's so much opportunity for anyone who has the ability to just pick something that they like, one of the trade setups that we have, pick it with a market that you're comfortable with the risk in, and just sit down and trade it. You know, it just works. That's it. You have to just put your mind to it, settle down, and trade.
Sorry. It's kind of like going to the car dealer and saying, "That's a very shiny car you have there," and the car dealer says, "Why, yes, it is. What would it take to put you into one of these cars today?" That's usually what they say. And if you said, "Well, here's the deal. I'd like to drive it for a week. You know, I want to go home. I want to get the kids. I'm going to pack up some picnic lunches. We're going to go to the desert. We're going to go up in the mountains. We're going to take a drive down the coast. And we're going to put some miles on this thing. You know, maybe 1,000, maybe 1,500. We're going to drive it in low elevations and high elevations. We're going to get some sand up under there. So I'm just warning you. And we're going to do that for an entire week, and then I'll be back with the car. And at that point, I'll let you know if I want to buy this car or not." What's that car guy going to say?
He's going to say,
"Are you
nuts?
I don't
think so.
What, are you out of your mind? You crazy?"
You kidding? That's a car.
That's how insane we are. We need some of those late-night commercials. Like the Crazy Carl or whoever that guy was. Who's the crazy guy that used to sell the electronics out of New Jersey or New York before he went to prison? What was that guy?
Yeah, I'm not sure we need that guy. But.
Yeah, we don't want that guy, but, you know, he's busy. He has a job now. He's working in the kitchen or the laundry.
Making license plates.
Hey, have you ever watched The Breakout Kings, a TV show?
No, I haven't.
It's kind of interesting. People have some very creative ways of breaking out of prison. Last night, on a recorded episode I watched, these guys, the bad guy's in jail, and he's got $9 million on the outside waiting for him. So he's got money to burn, literally. Mm-hmm. So he buys a house like a mile away from the prison, a foreclosure, right, a short sale. So he picks it up cheap. And his henchmen buddies do it, of course, under assumed names. But the only reason they buy the house is they go into one of the bedrooms there and they start a tunnel. And I'm talking a full-scale tunnel. From a mile away, they start this thing, or more, from the prison. And they put in little tracks and like a little train car down there. And pretty fascinating. I just thought of that because we talked about the Crazy Carl guy that went to jail. But anyway, the premise of this whole show is that they have this one cop. He's sort of like a rogue cop that just got out of rehab or something. Just checked out of the halfway house. And he has three cons working for him who... I didn't see the first episode, so I don't know how these three ex-cons got selected to be on his team. But now, whenever there's a prison breakout anywhere in the country, and apparently there's one every week. I didn't know that. Because there's a new episode every week. So, keep your doors locked, folks. And this one bald-headed cop and his three ex-cons, they go chase him down and lock him back up. They sure do. So, it's called The Breakout Kings, guys. What more can I say? But anyway, back to my car dealer analogy. Now, sometimes they will, like if you're a really good customer and it's a high-end car, they might let you take it home for a day. They might even let you take it home for a weekend. But if you tell the guy that you're going to take it up in the mountains, you're going to take it down to Baja, you're going to run it through the sand, you want to see how it behaves in the surf, you know, when you go 80 miles an hour and then pull up the emergency brake, you want to see how it spins. He's going to say, "Nah, give me those keys back." No, sir. But I'm just trying to make I'm going out of my way to make a point, is that we actually do encourage you to take it out for a test drive, put it through its paces, beat it up, kick it, whip it, whatever you want to do. So that at the end of the week, you can make an intelligent and informed decision if it's right for you. If not, we shake hands. We don't sue you for the damage to the car. we just say next. But mostly you're going to try to, you know, get a deal for those keys. And we've been on to make a deal. So take a free trial, cfrn.net/apply. Do it today. I've already created the link. I've already emailed it out to those people who requested this morning because I want to make sure you get the platform downloaded prior to the weekend, get your indicators installed so that you can spend the weekend getting accustomed to the platform. All right, Michael, anything else we need to add?
Nope. If anybody's watching what I'm doing right here, I'm just going through all the spots where the gold would have worked on that basis that we were trading this morning. Okay? Gold was a much better market for this today. The Russell, it was good for the first 45 minutes. Then after that, it sort of fell apart. But just wanted to point this out. So go to the website. Try it out. All right? That's it.
Okay, and Michael, I'm forwarding you an email right now that if you can follow up on that, that'd be great.
All right.
Coming your way. All right, guys, don't go away. We're headed to Vegas to talk to Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Thanks so much. Well, good morning, Michael.
Good morning, David.
All right.
Michael, I just had a thought. Instead of Slingshot, we could have called it the Breakout King. How did I miss that?
We still can.
Yeah, we could.
It's not late. It's not too late. I can take it out of the store.
The patent's still pending.
Trying to name one of your indicators or something?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, because you used to make fun of them because you didn't think they were very. We didn't have very sexy names, so we started working.
Well, you're
hard.
Finally coming around to the importance of the name.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the name of it now? The Breakout King.
King? It's a TV show.
Oh, okay. All right. Well. All right. Here's what's happening in the markets. The market right now wants to go up to 14.0650. That's what it wants to do.
Okay.
And that's what it's going to do. It's only a few points away, but that's where it's going. Doesn't need to be there until the next hour, though, in this current condition here that we're in now. A couple things we talked about yesterday. We'll get right into it here if you want to. you may recall that we talked about yesterday's...
So you're saying it's going to challenge the high of the session? Is that 14.0650?
It's going to take it out.
Okay.
Yeah, because 650 is higher than the high of the session, isn't it?
I'm talking about 650 is the high of Globex.
Oh, okay. I'm talking about the high of today's pit session or day session. There's no pit anymore, really, but 14.0525, what they want to do right now, you know, today, right now, in today's fifth hour, you know, we have a natural level at 14.0650.
Okay. Actually, so, the Globex high is 14.0625.
Yeah, there you are. Okay. So if you want to make a little money, you can just go along. How's that?
Okay. Sounds good.
Buy yourself a dinner over the weekend. Get a little something. You know, buy yourself a new T-shirt. Yesterday during the program with you, Dwayne, yesterday we were talking about, I mentioned that the market was going to bottom in the sixth hour, plus or minus an hour, but they had bottomed a little bit early. Remember, they did it one hour early yesterday, or did they do it on time? I think they did it 1 hour early, and in the fifth. And I said there was going to be a real tradable advance, nice move up off of that because it was a, I forgot if it was a volatility cycle or not. I hope somebody out in the audience took advantage of the idea that just whatever your system is, whether it's buying pullbacks on Reflected Wave or buying pullbacks on Michael and Dwayne's material, whatever it is, that would be the, you know, it would, we had a nice move up from there, you know, into the close, and then certainly we continued into today. today's session is further confirming some other things just in general about the condition of the market. We're still very much in an uptrend, and we'll see how, you know, the market plays out here for the remainder of the day. But today they bottomed right at our 1401, or excuse me, 1396, 1395 downside target, which is listed in the support and resistance panel. This level may or may not be close, may be close to some of the stuff that you have, Dwayne, as well. But the 1396.95 level is or should be difficult to get below. It's possible they could have spiked it a little bit deeper than they did. I mean, certainly they could have. But what the fact that they didn't, here's the thing. The fact that they just went down today and touched 95.75, this is a very light, you know, almost just a kiss of that level, and then reversed, means that the market is going to go up to 650 or higher, and then we want to potentially trade the top that they put in now in today's fifth hour. So they're going to run up and do 650 or higher, and then we're going to look to trade the top down. So that's the basic idea of what we're thinking about for the rest of today. the first thing I would do, excuse me, on the reversal, because we're not there yet, we haven't even done the 650 yet, the first thing we're going to do on the reversal is we're going to trade, well, actually, let's let them put it in, because we'll put this into Messenger Pro for the people. If you wanted to see, because you know, there may be a roadmap from this, you can sign up for Messenger Pro right now. You can go jump on right now and see, you know, if you want to take a free trial for today. And we'll put this out there. I'm being, you know, I'm trying to be hesitant with giving out too much over the radio because we've been doing that for a long time. But between you and I, Dwayne, I love giving this stuff out on the radio. So I may just have to tell some of our customers that sometimes I just give things out on the radio. How's that? Hey man, you're giving things out on the radio.
It could be any.
Yeah, that's what I do on the radio.
Right.
What were you going to say?
You can just put it in your disclaimer.
That's right. Sometimes you hear things on the radio that you won't hear on Messenger Pro. Sometimes you'll see things in Messenger Pro you won't hear on the radio. That sort of thing.
Messenger Pro is for the dissemination of information not given out on the live radio program.
That's right. For a second there, I thought you almost were referring to a product that would be for African Americans, Messenger Bro.
I actually said Fro.
Oh, Fro. Okay. I wasn't sure what I should make of that. Anyway, we're just playing around, being joking here. So that's basically it for the S&P. We're, you know, clearly a continued uptrend from yesterday's bottom that we talked about, and we can switch over to a few other markets right now just to check while we're watching this market do its thing, if you want to. Or is there something in the news, Dwayne, that you want to talk about, or some personal problems I can help solve for you right live on the radio?
No, I'm good.
Okay. What are you doing this weekend, Dwayne?
This weekend, we're having a deal in the park where you hide eggs and the kids go and they chase down the eggs.
Okay.
And thousands of kids come. We have 10,000 eggs, and then after they find
you have 10,000 eggs.
10,000. Actually,
now who got those eggs? I mean, that's a lot of eggs.
Well,
where are those?
We're a community of believers who hide eggs for a living.
You know. Okay, so a whole bunch of people. That's a whole bunch of people getting together to get eggs. Okay, so
it's
I got
our church.
You.
Yeah.
There's so many.
Every year, there's this thing called Easter, and we do a thing in the park, and we do it for the kids, and the kids come, the kids bring mom and dad.
That's nice.
And it gives us an opportunity to share the gospel, and the kids get to find the eggs, but they also get to sit down and hear the story of what Easter is really all about. And we usually have a slightly, we have a very good magician on hand who does some tricks to entertain the kids.
You know how silly that is.
And
you just
bouncy houses and, you know, all that stuff. It's just a
great really nice.
Community kind of a get-together sort of thing.
Oh, that's very nice.
So that's
what's
what
the
doing.
Park? Is it the
very
world's largest amusement park? Is that where it happens?
No, it's Cesar Chavez Park.
Oh. Is that the largest one? Is that the one that you overlook, or is this a different one?
The largest city park in America is called South Mountain Park.
Oh, that's it. And how large is the largest park? What makes it, you know, what's its size? Do we know?
How many acres?
Yeah, or how do you measure that? I mean, it's the largest, so I guess it must be really big.
It's bigger than Central Park.
Wow. Wow, really? That really is big.
I should just keep a crib note, because periodically you ask the same question.
Oh, well, I'm so sorry. Excuse me for that.
I mean, I should just remember it.
Well, you never told me before that it's larger than the New York Park.
I did.
And did I ask this question about how large it actually is? Because I don't remember
you did.
Getting an answer. Maybe I just didn't get. Maybe your crib note should be get the correct answer so that I can get the answer, since I still don't really have it. It's like somebody saying it's a city as large as, you know, larger than Santa Monica. Well,
as a matter of
how
fact,
large is it?
I sent pictures to your iPhone. I additionally sent to your iPhone the...
I was just wondering about the actual size. These
the
are...
link. I sent you the link.
Okay. Checking
so
through my iPhone now for those
Wikipedia.
Pictures.
Mm-hmm. 17,000 acres.
Wow, that is really big. That's huge.
It is the largest city park. Oh, I got to change my intro. It's not the largest city park in America.
What is it?
It's the largest city park in the world. I digress.
You had fun with that.
It's on the
That's
internet,
good.
Guys. I don't make this stuff up. I just report it.
No, that is really huge. 17,000 acres is a big old piece of land.
Yep.
And that's really, really big. That is amazing.
You can bring your family or a group of 5,000 people, 5,000 of your closest friends, to various meeting areas and ramadas.
Mm-hmm.
The Piedra Grandes Ramada is available on a first-come, first-served basis. Most of the ramadas will accommodate about 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
We boast 58 miles of trails, ranging in length from 1 to 14 miles. They're rated in difficulty from moderate to very difficult. The easiest of the trails, so that might be for you, David, Javelina Canyon Trail.
I'll take the Javelina Canyon Trail.
And, baseline.
Breakfast. I'll take the Javelina Canyon Trail breakfast.
We have horses. You can have a trail ride. You can have a breakfast ride. You can have a cookout ride. You certainly can. You can you can bring your electric car and take a scenic drive.
Ooh, now you're talking my kind of chit-chat. That's nice.
It is one sweet park.
How far are you from it? You overlook it.
I look out my window. When I look out my window, I'm looking at it. I'm looking at the mountain range.
You can literally walk out and walk to that park.
I overlook the world's largest city park.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that.
It's a true story.
You should upgrade your radio program to reflect that it's the world's largest, not just the largest one in America.
I'm going to go to work on that immediately following.
Because I think that's important to people.
Well, it is. Apparently, it's important to you.
It is. It's very important to me.
I just sent everybody some beautiful pictures of the winding roads. It's very nice.
No, it is. It's very beautiful. Maybe you should post some. Have you posted any of that on your thing? Oh, sure.
You betcha. Okay.
Anyway, so let's take a little look around here. The S&P is still, well, they're moving down a little bit here. we'll let them see if they can put in any further advance here. If we did get something unusual to happen here today, and we haven't really had anything unusual yet. It's been a pretty normal day so far. But there's probably a really good trading opportunity if the market does show unusual behavior. They haven't yet, but we'll talk about that, the other side of this trade, just in case they, what we were talking about earlier with regard to the advance. We'll see if they can, fulfill that, put the thing in here. And I'll get back to the S&P in a minute here. Let's take a quick look around. I don't know what the news is today either, so we're going to want to, maybe you can give us a little update on that as well, if you happen to know.
Michael just went through the news a bit earlier. Do you recall what it was, Mike?
Anything important?
I will tell you what it was.
All right.
It was, hang on a second. Let me scroll down to it. All right. Core PC price index, personal spending, personal income, Chicago PMI, U of M sentiment, U of M inflation expectations. That's what the news was.
Large spaceship lands on White House lawn. Michael Bork exits spaceship and introduces himself to world. Something like that?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Yes. Yes. With short-term memory intact.
Yeah.
All right. That's pretty much it. The core PC price index, the consensus on that was plus 0.1%. It came in at plus 0.1%. Personal spending consensus was plus 0.6%. The actual was plus 0.8%. Personal income consensus plus 0.4%. The actual was actually it was plus 0.2%, but it was down. I think that the little dichotomy there, the difference, personal spending is up, personal income is down.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Chicago PMI, 62.2. The consensus was 63.2. The sentiment, consensus was 74.9. It came in at 76.2. That's bullish. Inflation expectations, the prior report was 4.0%, and this one's 3.9. Really no difference.
Okay.
That is what we have for news. And that's it, too. There's nothing else scheduled for today.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, let's jump over real quick to the gold market. We'll take a quick look at that. We have a number of markets we can look at, as we normally do. Let me see if there's anything that we had mentioned. I don't have my notes with me today. I don't remember if we mentioned anything about gold yesterday, but just roughly in general, gold was had advanced, you know, recently, had made a top on March 27th. This was a reflected wave. We had a really good sell-off from there. We had mentioned on the program that we would have preferred for the market to reach 1701 on the upside, or 1700, something in that range. And that by not reaching it, it would normally imply weakness and a good break. And that is what happened. My preference would have been to be able to trade it short from that 1700 level, and they got to 1696. So we couldn't really issue a trade off of that because we really want the normal setup if we can. They had a really good decline, though. They closed yesterday above the 1649 level, which is important to us. That's bullish, and that indicates the likelihood of higher prices in gold. Now, this isn't an outright forecast, but generally speaking, I wouldn't be surprised to see the market, you know, continue advance from this bottom. You know, we're trading right now at 66. If we got up into the 86 or 85 level, I would not be surprised to see that over a number of days. So that's, you know, just a general outlook on gold. Here I'm looking. I thought there was one other important indication, and if I did say something yesterday about it, someone can remind me. Let me just take another couple of charts and look here. So, yeah, that, I think, is everything we have on gold. Yeah, I think that was everything we had on gold. We, of course, have been talking about the Treasury bond market, forecasting the bottom for March 19th, the week of March 19th, and they are still bouncing off of that. We are expecting higher prices to continue. I mentioned yesterday the market was getting to a critical juncture on the upside for at least a reaction, and we may have started that already. But as far as I'm concerned, we are still going to be in a multi-week advance here. So the bigger picture, by the way, is on the downside. The bigger picture is the larger top. And I was just talking to somebody the other day, and I was mentioning this. I think it's probably worth mentioning on the program. We have a very unusual economic condition that we're not going to see for a long, long, long time. And that is the condition of having very low consumer prices overall. I'm not including gasoline in that, but take housing as an example because of the housing crash. You know, there's a lot of things where, well, let's just take housing. Let's just call it a housing outlook. We have very low housing prices, and this is the two-pronged thing, very low interest rates. That's really rare. You might see that once in a lifetime. Very low housing and very low interest. What's common is very high interest and maybe low to moderate housing, or very high housing prices and reasonable interest rates. But you rarely, if ever, will you see housing prices low and interest rates very low. Housing at an extreme low and interest rates at an extreme low. This is really, in my opinion, highly unusual, and would indicate to me that you better buy something soon, because this two-pronged thing isn't going to stay in this position for very long. That's my opinion. And that we're not going to see these housing prices stay the same at these low levels, nor are we going to see interest rates stay low at these levels. Both of them are going to go up. And then later, they will work themselves out to some combination of high housing, low interest, high housing, moderate interest, low housing, you know, higher interest. But it's just very rare. It just struck me the other day that both of these things are in a position that you don't see but once in a lifetime. I'm not sure I remember a time in the past. Maybe, Duane, maybe you can correct me or counter this. But when was the last time we had, or do you know of a last time that we had, really, really low interest? Because for most, and really low housing. Because for most of my adult life, I remember interest rates being high and slowly coming down over the last, literally, like 30 years. They were up at 11 or 12% for a while.
I mean, we have,
you know,
historically low interest rates right now.
We do.
We've never had interest rates where they are now, not in my lifetime.
Not in my lifetime. And in housing, I haven't seen, I mean, you could say 30, 40 years ago, housing was cheaper, but it wasn't at an extreme relative to itself. It was just, this is how much a house costs. Maybe it's an $80,000 house. And people say, boy, that's a, you know, that's a moderately expensive house that you just bought. But it wasn't considered, now it's considered a really cheap house. But they weren't, I don't remember the housing being at extremes at the same time as the interest rate was at an extreme. So it's just an unusual two-pronged configuration that I think bodes very well for a person who was looking to buy a home and wanted to say to themselves, you know, I bought right. And that's what I think, that's where I think we are right now because of those two. So that means if you own a home, it's probably going to start to go back up in value. Not in any big way, but it's going to start turning, and you're going to see, you know, pricing start to turn and head higher over some time here. So, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I think the bottom's in on housing. I think we're done on the downside. years and years it's going to take to repair the damage and to rebuild confidence and all that stuff. But as far as bottoms go, you know, roughly speaking, well, I don't think you're going to see any lower prices.
Here's the thing. You know, the you're familiar with Section 8 housing?
Yes.
Okay. And the government is willing to pay, I think, somewhere in the vicinity for, let's say, a family of four or five. I think the government's willing to pay somewhere between... And if anyone knows the actual numbers, feel free to type them in, or if somebody wants to Google it and bring it up, that's fine. But I believe a family of four or five that qualifies for Section 8 housing, mm-hmm. the government will pay their rent to the tune of somewhere between $700 and $1,000 a month.
Wow, Section 8 costs that much to live?
Well, I don't. What do you mean by it costs that much to live?
That's the rental price?
Well, I'm saying I believe that if you qualify for Section 8,
mm-hmm.
that, well, you know what? I'm just going to, let me just Google the average Section 8. Average Section.
That just seemed, to me, it just seemed expensive.
Rents.
You know.
I wanted to find a simple website that would just give me the average.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, call it 500. If 700 or 1,000 seems high, call it 500.
Yeah, fair enough.
Call it 500. you can buy a very nice, almost new, four-bedroom home for $75,000. So at what point does the government say, you know what, we're paying
right.
$500 a month for folks to rent these apartments.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we just buy them a house?
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, the government starts giving away houses that are sitting vacant as
mm-hmm.
opposed to paying rents for people. And so what does that do to the rest of the housing market? It keeps it stagnant potentially for 10, 20 years, maybe.
If they were to do that, or are they doing that?
If they were to do that.
Oh, I see.
Now, I'm not in favor of driving down the real estate market by any stretch of the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
However, if we want to talk about how the government spends money, then why would you pay that much rent for a family mm-hmm. when you could? I mean, if you're going to, there's got to be average Section 8 voucher value. Let me try that. Average Section 8 voucher value. Let's see if that gives me a firm figure.
We don't have, just for a minute, also, we don't have any more, unless it's, well, maybe you're right, maybe on a really low end, kind of a bad neighborhood, a four bedroom home for 75, we don't have much of that left out here, you know, in Las Vegas at that low of a price level.
You don't have prices at what level?
Well, in Las Vegas, in the main part of Las Vegas, because I've been looking around, we don't have four bedroom stuff that is $75,000.
I bet you do. I bet you just, well, depends on, well, maybe you don't.
Yeah, I've been looking pretty seriously lately, and we don't have that. Now, in North Las Vegas, that might be the case, in sort of a worse area, you know, where the neighborhood is sort of beat down, there's no HOA, no association, people have their car up on blocks, and the houses have been treated badly. Yeah, you could probably see that. I don't think that's the normal, though, for here. Because the prices have, you know, they kind of firmed up.
Hey, here's a guy in Las Vegas, Mr. Daftian, who rents to Section 8 tenants. He paid $60,000 in cash for a four-bedroom house in North Las Vegas. He charges.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. North Las Vegas.
He charges rent of $1,436 each month. Now
for a 14 for a four bedroom
to a Section 8 tenant.
Wow, that seems like high rent. Gosh.
Well, it does
for Section 8 for Section 8 housing.
It really does. See, I'm still not. It still didn't give me. This article is foreclosures mean Section 8 tenants now living in luxury homes. That's the spin on mm-hmm. this particular article. But it.
You know, it surprises me. I mean, take it for what it's worth. That there must be more than a there must be more than one person living in that house. Obviously, that's earning money because $1,400 rent is. You know, that's decent rent for somebody to pay, and a Section 8 person paying it seems like a, obviously, seems a little high. It really does. That's a great return on his investment. If he pays $60,000 for a piece of property and it produces $1,400 a month, that guy doesn't need day trading.
Under the Section 8 program, a qualifying family or individual contributes 30% of their income towards rent and utilities on an approved property, and the Section 8 voucher makes up the rent above the family's contribution to a predetermined level. On top of the 30% contribution, the individual or family is responsible for making up any difference between their Section 8 voucher and the actual housing cost.
Mm-hmm.
Qualification requirements, property approvals, and Section 8 payment levels are determined on a local basis by PHAs.
Hmm.
So it's still I still didn't find a site that says we'll pay up to X amount of dollars. There is a number, and some of you guys that are good with the internet, you could probably figure it out.
That's like a 2.5% per month return on your $60,000. That's really good.
This guy is pretty. The guy they interviewed in the article, he's pretty excited.
Yeah. Well, that's surprising. Anyway, so my point originally was just that low interest rates and low housing is you're not going to see that for a long, long time after you know the bottom, which I think is in. It's only going to be here for a window of time. So. Keep that in mind, and we'll move on to a couple other markets here. Just give me a minute on the gold. I just want to review this one more time. I thought I had something yesterday in it, and it's been a long week, Dwayne, so maybe that's why.
Well, here's a way of getting an idea. Section 8, here's a... Here are Section 8 approved rentals in Phoenix, Arizona. Here's a four-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath house, beautiful house, $1,200 a month. Here's a three.
How many square feet was it? Did it say how many square feet it was?
I got to click more details.
Oh, don't worry. Okay.
Well, just click more details.
Click more details.
Square feet, 2,023.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a three-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath condo, $850 a month. I mean, there's a huge list here. I mean, and you go down to one-bedroom, one-bath, $375 a month.
Mm-hmm.
But these all qualify for Section 8. And so if you take here's one, five-bedroom, three-bath, $1,400 a month. Okay, the family that qualifies for that, they've got to pay 30%, and the government is saying that they will make up the difference.
Wow.
So, 1,400 times 30% is $420. So, basically, the government is paying $1,000 a month for that family to rent that home. For $1,000 a month, they could buy them that home.
Should we be Section 8 slumlords? Is that what you're saying?
Because of the situation of the housing market, the Section 8 landlords aren't, you know, that's the whole point of the other guy's article, is that people who used to have to live in the slums, the Section 8 people, are now able to live in some pretty nice neighborhoods and some pretty nice homes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, how long will the government be able to extend itself to that level, and at what point will they say, hey, wait a minute, we need a different program. We need to change the way this entitlement works, because mm-hmm. we could just buy these houses and give them to these people. And then, I don't know, something critical will change here. Because your original point is that the numbers are so out of whack with the low prices and the low interest rates that something has to change.
This is like, you know, spatial relationships. You know, things are in a current position that can't withstand the natural forces for very long before they have to readjust. Now, these are really big ships we're talking about, pricing on homes. And, you know, think of a ship in the water and the interest rate. It takes time for that to happen. But once they start to divide and split and go back into their normal position, ooh, it's going to be a long time before they're back in this position again. certainly not in my lifetime. So, yeah, by the way, I'm 54.
Just sorry to hear that.
Yeah. how old are you, Dwayne? One more time.
52, if I did the
52.
Math right.
52. Well, that's an adorable age. I remember being 52.
Yeah.
Very sweet. Okay, let's move on a little bit here. Let me just a moment here. Okay. Okay, let's take a look at a few other things. Is there a particular market you want to look at, Dwayne, or is there anything, or should I just run through them as we normally do?
Whatever you want to go to. I've got the bonds up there right now, but...
Yeah, let's leave the bonds just for a moment. So I know I've been hammering this thing for a while about the bonds and the interest rates and the homes and stuff, but really... I'd love to know that somebody took advantage, if you're in a position to take advantage of it, and be very happy that you did later, because it's a very unusual position. It's interesting. You know, the savvy, the smart money, the big boys, the people who, you know, are really in the games, the various games in the world, they know what's going on. They get their opportunities laid out in front of them, or they dig them up. And every once in a while, ordinary people, like all of us, the opportunity becomes, it gets given to us as well. We don't have to be specialists and, you know, super sharp dudes that, you know, have all their stuff together in these niche areas. Once in a great while, the markets move so much that it gives the ordinary guy an opportunity to do something really right. And really powerful, compelling, and in the end, successful. I think that's where we are. I think that's what's happened. I think all of this has not only put that position there, it's also wiped out on the way, because it is such a big, blunt hammer, many of some of the slicker players in this whole thing happening. And it leaves this opportunity for ordinary people suddenly who would never be able to, in their ordinary day-to-day lives, be able to say, hey, you know, here's an opportunity. It's just laid out in front of us. Most of us are too busy. You know, we've got, you know, you've got a family, kids, living your life and trying to get by without knowing all the details about where the slick deals are and the good way to do things. Some people are just naturals at that, but a lot of people are not. And life just comes along sometimes, and these big swings take place, and suddenly it just lays an opportunity out in front of people. This is, I think, that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, even in places like Maryland, which are typically, you know, very expensive, here's a one-bedroom, one-bath for $39,000.
Mm-hmm.
One-bedroom, one-bath for $49,000. These aren't Section 8s. These are just houses for sale.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. And it allows new people
new
to come in.
A brand-new three-bedroom, two-bath, $55,000 in Greenbelt, mm-hmm. Maryland.
There you are.
One bedroom, one bath, 57. One bedroom, 59,000, 65,000. So, yep,
yeah.
Bargains. They're everywhere.
Those are bargains. Allows new people to come in, start a whole new cycle of those, that whole group of people buying in and stuff. And there still is some time, but I would like to light the fire under anybody who, you know, it would be worth borrowing money from your parents or borrowing money if you could from a bank or whatever to take advantage of this type of thing, I believe. Now, you know, am I an expert in all this? No. But I do know markets, and I do know what happened to the housing market, and I can envision it on a chart as to where we were, and I've even seen charts of the real estate market. And I can't really apply my best tools to that because I don't have, you know, I don't have it on a chart in the same way that I do these others. But in general, I really do believe this is an unprecedented opportunity. It's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, at least for most American cities. There's opportunities in other parts of the world, you know, and things like that, but I really think you should take very seriously the idea that the little guy has a real shot here to plant a seed that really grows nicely in not so long a time. I mean, it's not that you'd be buying it necessarily to sell it tomorrow. You'd be buying it so you can have a nice home to live in, as an example, more than you could afford normally. Out here, we have homes I've seen, brand new homes that sell for $175,000 that easily, at the peak of the market, would have fetched $600,000. You would have walked in and you would have said, well, this is a really nice home. And then the guy would have said, well, it's $600,000. And then that would have put a sparkle on it. You say, God, this really is nice. Because you just found out it's worth $600,000. Well, that house now is $175,000 here in Las Vegas. Fully decked out, fully loaded, all the options. You know, that's what I'm saying. So I'm sure it's similar in some of your areas, in some of these various areas, like what Dwayne's reading off there. The Section 8 thing is interesting. So the government is going to pay part of that rent. So if you want to become a Section 8 slumlord, you can – it's not even a slum anymore necessarily. You basically are getting the – the government is, has a program that is going to pay a good portion of these people's rents. And that's probably a very, very good return on your money because typically, and I don't get onto the markets, but I just want you to know, a typical return for somebody who rents homes to other people is 1%. So that means if you spent $150,000, let's just say, on a house, you would get $1,500 a month, 1% a month. That's kind of just a center normal number. To more than double that is an amazing thing, and it could only happen because that's what I was saying. These people aren't paying $1,400 a month in rent and then have enough. I mean, you know, so the government is, there's a program there. And under this administration, that program is not going to go away anytime soon. Okay? Barack Obama is going to be elected president. He's going to be our president for the next 4 years. Ain't no two gosh darn ways about it, I believe. I wish it was wrong. I wish somebody else would get in there. But I believe he has, you know, a very, very high likelihood of being voted in president. In brief, like I've said before, 3.5 years of everything he's put his hands on is crumpled and burned and failed. And half the people still love him. With that in mind, it's very difficult to imagine how he could lose this election. He also happens to have about $1 billion war chest to go out there, and he happens to be attractive to a lot of people. Attractive for a number of reasons. I don't mean physically attractive, but I mean, you know, he's young, youthful, nice looking, has a big smile, and all that. So he happens to have a very, you know, charismatic thing about him, and charisma goes a long way. You know, it really does. Charisma goes a really long way. It helps people that might not ordinarily get their particular vision into the White House get there. So, whether you like Obama or not, you know, charisma, whether you like, you know, a Republican or a Democrat, whatever, we've had a lot of charismatic ones. Bill Clinton, Democrat, I mean, wonderfully charismatic man. I actually, like I've said, actually enjoyed his presidency. I kind of enjoyed his energy. you know, he knew how to actually, if there was a great uniter in many ways, he was it. He knew how to go down that aisle and get two sides to come together and compromise. He really did. You go back and take a look at how many things he got the left and the right together on. It was pretty remarkable. really. So maybe you didn't like his policies and all that, or maybe you did. He wasn't nearly as extreme. He was much more pragmatic and realistic. I really believe that Barack Obama, I really believe he doesn't care about the money he's spending. I really believe that. I believe that he just simply wants to get his vision done, and he'll do whatever it takes, he believes, at that time to get that vision done, whether that means raping the United States Treasury, which is what he's doing. I mean, there's no other way to say it. We've just, you know, gone from $9 trillion to, you know, we've almost, you know, we've gone from $9 trillion to $16 trillion in debt. He's going to be at $20 trillion. I've told you, I forecast, he's going to be president, and we're going to be at $20 trillion. So just keep that number in your mind. So he will have more than doubled the deficit, what we owe in principle, in two of his terms. So, you know, that's not a good thing. But the fact is, I think he is going to be brought into office, and these programs like these Section 8 things, they're not going anywhere. That's my belief. Entitlement programs are going to grow. They're not going to shrink. Government's going to grow. It's not going to shrink. Regulation on businesses is going to grow. It's not going to shrink. And in spite of all that, the U.S. economy will bounce back because the United States is stronger than its president. People will figure out how to deal with this idiocy, and we'll be able to make businesses happen and work. It'll be under a lot of different regulations, a lot of more government, you know, control and all that, but they will work out. It'll happen. It'll take longer for that to happen because, you know, nothing's being encouraged. You know, this is, in my opinion, a guy who is anti-prosperity. He's more socialism where everybody is equal. Because why do I know that? Because it bothers him that other people have more than other people do. And he's made that very clear in a number of different ways. He's made that very clear. And not that he doesn't, you know, he doesn't hate those people that have more. He makes it sound like he does. But when he throws his parties, I don't see any poor people at his parties. I don't know if anybody else has, but I sure haven't. He's not inviting the middle class or the poor to his parties. He's inviting the very people he claims to be railing against. Go ahead, Dwayne.
No, I was just saying I haven't been to any of his parties.
Well, you're not poor. I'm talking about, you know.
I mean, I'm just saying I couldn't have seen anybody because I wasn't there.
Oh, right. Well, when you look at the guest list, which are published, those people are not poor.
They're not.
They're wealthy.
I agree.
So,
anyway. You got that right.
Yeah. Anyway, so we'll see. The Section 8 thing is really interesting. That's an interesting way for somebody to go out and if you wanted to do that way, you could have the government help pay those rents and you could make very good income off of your investment.
According to Dwayne G., in California, Section 8 has been buying houses for people for decades.
Okay. Wow.
And according to Bruce, the max Section 8 will pay is $2,200. I don't know if that...
Per family?
I guess so.
Well, that's livable. I think we can deal with that.
Yeah. Charles says he used to have Section 8 tenants in an apartment building he used to own in Vegas.
Wow. That's like the government saying, listen, the maximum we're going to pay for a hammer is $1,500.
Yeah.
Okay, we're not going to pay any more than $1,500 for a hammer. We're the government. We have limits. Go ahead.
Did you cover gold yet? Richard wanted to know what it was you had to say about gold. He stepped away.
I wish I had something more to say about gold, Richard. I don't. I thought I had said something yesterday, but nobody's reminded me, and I don't know. I just think they're going higher here, like I mentioned. I think there's an opportunity on the long side. We don't have an outright trade, but generally speaking, I'm looking for continued up off of yesterday's bottom, the March 29th low that they made. We mentioned that if they closed above 1649, which they did, that was bullish, and I think you're going to see higher prices. And I mentioned, you know, up into the 1680s or higher, just short term. You know, it's not a big deal, but that's kind of what I'm looking at here. And then we went through the T-bonds. We talked about the bonds, the weekly bottom, of course, that we've talked about several times, that today, yesterday, with the markets at a critical juncture, we may have a turn coming here on the downside for short-term on bonds. The euro is continuing higher here. We did have something now. I do want to remind everybody we talked about this. And let me just bring it up. For the week of this week, March 26th. Now, the March 26th week is obviously a market that's moving up. And so next week we're going to want to be very watchful of this market to see if we get the earliest signs of a reversal. We'll talk about that because this is very important where we are. Now, having said that, I just want to mention the natural price for the week of March 26th, and I mentioned this last week, was 131.41. And the market completed the natural price last week, and the low last week was 131.40. So that has a bullish tone to it right there because they just went to the exact price, you know, within on the 1 week early and touched it. So next week for the euro will be important. I'm not advocating being short or long in it, except that there's a bullish bias to the market, you know, at least coming into next week here. And then we'll make a better judgment on it at that time. We also, on the daily chart, have April 4th, which I mentioned, on the euro as well. This will be tradable next week because April 4th is Wednesday. And so any movement that we get next week before Wednesday would be potentially a setup-able thing for the trade off of the April 4th turn. So keep your eye on that. We'll talk about that as we get a little closer to it. We've talked a number of times, let's switch over to crude, about the month of March. We've been talking about this for more than a month now. The month of March being a top in crude, which would send prices down ostensibly, and that would be the futures prices down, and that would ostensibly, hopefully, react over time to the gasoline prices. Let's see, I've got about... You know what I'm going to bring up, Dwayne, don't you? I've got about 3,000 miles on my little Chevy Volt, the car that explodes and bursts into flames and flips mm-hmm. over and all that.
Right.
And
makes people lose their jobs.
That cost. What's that?
Cost all those people their job.
Yeah, exactly. I've used 1.4 gallons now, 3,000 miles, just kind of letting you know. Not up to 2 gallons yet. So... You guys with your Priuses out there, that's good. You're getting 50 miles per gallon. That's real nice. Yeah. I wonder what the mileage works out to at 1.4 with 3,000. Oh, it works out to about, 3,000 miles per gallon. That's pretty close to what it works out to. My case, though, I'm driving around in the city, and so I'm not making longer trips. If I made longer trips, the gasoline generator would turn on, and it gets about 37 miles per gallon when driven, you know, lightly. It'll get about 37 miles per gallon. And so that, over a period of time, would drag the very high mileage that it gets because it's not using gasoline down to a more reasonable, say, 150 to 200 miles per gallon or whatever, depending on how far you drive. It's one of the beautiful things, though, is that you don't have that range anxiety. You can be zipping around and, you know, suddenly you run out of battery and you just keep driving. The thing just clicks on and then you're into gasoline. The one downside is that the gasoline it does use is high-octane gasoline. It's the premium. And the reason they use that is because they know most people are not going to be using a lot of gasoline. And so it sits in the tank for quite some time. So because it's going to sit in there, they don't want it to vaporize or turn into water, you know, because water can accumulate in there. So the tank is a specially sealed tank, and it actually has a suction in there. And they specify that you have to use high-test gasoline, you know, premium. Now, if you're a person who drives, you know, 70, 80 miles a day, then you don't have to use high-test because you're going to be burning through the gasoline. But if you're like me and a lot of time goes by before you're using gasoline, you have to have the tank filled, which is a 9-gallon tank, with premium. So I don't know if that makes much of a difference to people or not, but at the current gas prices, it, you know, it adds a little bit. So let's see. So the crude market. We talked about crude.
I think I was
the
12
monthly
the last time I heard somebody call it high test.
Yeah, I know. Remember, I don't know where that came into my language. High test gasoline. That's like from the 60s.
It really is.
I mean, seriously, where did that come from?
Flashback.
What have you been smoking? What have I been smoking?
Richard had asked a question earlier. He asked yesterday, and I never got a chance to ask you, so let me ask again. Richard said yesterday's low at 1360 or 1386 and a quarter. He asked yesterday if that was an important low. if the market was going, was to be going on to making new highs, is that possibly the case? Or is there another price level which would signal a top is in on the monthly reflected wave?
Okay, let's take a look real quick. I'll do my best short-term work on that for you real quick, Richard. I don't know if I have a whole lot to add to it or not, but let's take a quick look. First of all, from this point forward, I certainly, and that we've almost touched it today, we have touched 1406 today. Okay, we have touched it on the Globex, the 1406.25. That would be the first initial target, of course, for the market to get to on the upside. So his question is the first place I would maybe be interested in at least looking at the market on the short side would probably be closer to the 1411 or 1412 area on the upside. So we're a distance from that right now. That would be something that I'd be looking at. I mean, we're standing still right now. I could probably answer your question better next week. Nothing's changed with regard to our outlook that I mentioned earlier. We're now in the fifth hour, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And so, as I mentioned earlier, we're looking for the market to attempt higher into the 1406.50 level into this hour. So we'll watch and see how that plays out. I don't have much more than that right now, but the month of March closes today, and remember I was really asking for people to give me the weekend to let the market close. Let me do some of just our analysis over the weekend and see what we come up with. We're certainly going to close above 1373. By doing so, because it's a quarter, it's not just a month, it's a quarter, it means that ultimately we're going to be up at 1477 and higher in this run. So substantially higher prices are still coming, even though there is a monthly top. We're in the on-time month for it. The fact that the month closed above 1373, which we're assuming that it will do, of course, that changes some of the importance of the top, or potentially does. And the fact that we have this sort of natural target at substantially higher prices means that we're going to continue in our thing. And we've shown our put statement from May of last year. We showed this at the Reflected Wave Seminar. I haven't mentioned it on the program. We passed it around. From May of last year, doing nothing but selling puts, which are bets that the market is going to go sideways to higher. We booked $98,000 from May of last year. That's the booked gains, but some of the positions are still open now. We have options that are still on that have August expiration. That's not trading in the futures. That's just collecting premium. That's something, that's why I suggest that people seriously consider the option premium thing. You can still lose money on it. You still have to manage the position. But the nature of the bet is somewhat different. And of the three of the four things that can go wrong, three of them tend to be in your favor. Rather, and I won't go into all this right now, but you know, you can put some bigger picture thing together with, as an example, a reflected wave, knowing that a larger top or bottom's in, and then you can use that information to sell premium and collect these premiums that, even if the market goes really good like it has on the upside, the best it's going to get for you is the 2 or 3 points or whatever it is that you've collected. In return for that, in return for the limited risk or the limited gain that you have other things going in your favor, which is that time decay ends up working in your favor. So as time passes, the position gets more in your favor. So I want people to consider, you know, learning more about the options market, and I suggest that book. I've mentioned it many times. Options as a strategic investment. It's not a beginner's book, and it's certainly, they don't print it in a pocket size edition, believe me. It's really big, but Lawrence McMillan wrote it. He has virtually every option strategy under the planet, under the sun, in that book. You might want to get a little bit of a primer before you read that book, but they look complicated at first, and there is a complexity to them, but it's not that hard if you put your mind to it to understand what's happening with options.
Walter asks, how much capital did you have to tie up for the $90,000 gains that you're talking about?
Okay. each of those, you have to assume, because I don't have the statement in front of me, but we have to assume that these were put options that we just rolled in the in a group of stocks. So there was quite a few stocks there. And I don't know if we have Bert on the phone or if
Bert's
he's back
on vacation.
Yet. Is Bert here?
He's on vacation.
Oh, he is still on vacation. Okay. The margin requirement on individual stocks is less than on the index. The index is $25,000 generally to put one option on. So we get a lot better bang for our buck. I don't know exactly how much, but I'm assuming, let's just assume it might have been, you know, let's just say it was a quarter of that for a stock, you know, for one stock. I don't really know, but let's, you know, you take 25,000 divided by four. Let's just say it's $6,000 per. And I don't remember how many we had on that list. I don't have it in front of me. It was quite a few. So let's just say there was 50 stocks. So maybe it was 300,000, something like that.
Okay.
That we had to tie up in margin in order to put the positions on, no pun intended, And then some of them, you know, you roll out of them. Sometimes they expire from May. Obviously, we weren't going out all that far in time. And then you replace the thing. You know, when the, like as an example, obviously we replaced a whole bunch of them when the market bottomed in October, and that prompted a whole new set of them to go on. So you do tie up capital, and that's the thing. That's why they say options, this type of selling, is they say it's more for professionals, because the ordinary day-to-day traders may not have studied options and may not be comfortable putting the margin requirement up. It's not that you're betting the margin. You're not placing a bet with that margin. You're simply using it as margin. So, you know, you have to make that distinction, because sometimes people get confused and they say, well, you know, if I do I have to put up $6,000, I have to bet $6,000 in order to make X number of dollars per stock? You're not betting that. You're just placing it in a margin account. And there's a very big distinction there between having to put that, you're not putting $6,000 in the market subject to its up and back and down. That margin is there. Yes, it's subject to movement, but you can manage your position, you know. So I'm assuming whoever asked that question, that's probably what it was, somewhere in that neighborhood. And but the benefit to that is that in order to get those same kinds of gains off of the index, we would have had to put up much larger amount of money. So that's why I like the idea of you're spreading yourself across a number of stocks that are in the same position that the index is in once the index is bottomed. So I hope that's helpful. I can actually get Dane on the next radio program. He'll tell you exactly how much we put up if you want to get those, to have that return. It's just that it's an easy bet. It's not like futures where we're watching every tick. And I enjoy futures, and Dwayne and everybody else enjoys futures. We do trade them. But the fact is that these put in options positions allow you to relax and not be in such a tick-for-tick mode. You could actually, you know, not even be at the office and just check in from time to time to see where the market is. It's probably a good idea to, you know, to keep an eye on your position, though, overall. I'm not telling people to go golfing, you know, all the stuff that we see the traders do.
According to Raja, margin on stocks, including gold stocks, is 50% of the strike price. So for a stock selling at $20, one put requires a $1,000 margin.
Okay, well, that's reasonable. So my $6,000, because we trade in higher price stocks generally, my $6,000 estimate is probably reasonable per stock, because we generally like higher price stocks because they're volatile. There's more movement, and we do have stocks that are under $100 for sure, quite a few. But I do like stocks that are above $100 because they really move, and they, you know, they're just there's a lot of action in those stocks. So, yeah, so there you go. That was my best guess, and it's probably a reasonable guess, about 6,000. If Bert was here, he could help us with that, and we could know.
Okay, and then Raja had a question for you. Do you sell out of the money or at the money?
If the market, that's a very reasonable question. If the market's putting in a bottom on a reflected wave basis for us, like as we did on the monthly chart in October, then in this particular case, it so happens that October was the one unit late. If we're lucky, like we were there, to have a one unit late monthly bottom, then we will sell closer to the low, meaning closer to the he's asking in the money, out of the money means, are you selling away from the bottom or are you right at where prices are at? Prices had already moved up by the time we had gotten in. We didn't take a big risk in terms of, a lot of these got sold after the market had firmed up in October. So from what I understand from what from what the sheet showed, we sold fairly close to the lows in those individual stocks. Had it been an on-time bar where there it still could be another dive down into a one unit late, we would have tended to sell, if we did sell at that point, out of the money more to protect the position. So that makes sense? You know, if it's one unit late and our risk is very small, we tend to sell closer to the money, so to speak, and therefore get more premium. If it's one unit early or on time, we might sell a little out of the money, which means you get paid less, but you have more room for the market to move. So it's on a case-by-case basis. Depends on how we read the market at that time. So it isn't, you know, these strategies have a mechanical side to them, but they're not purely mechanical. We are using judgment in every case, just like you do now in your trades. Just everybody has to, you know. And so those judgments are made at the time, you know. So let's see.
Ed asked, when you sell options, do you use a certain number of standard deviations to figure out how far you go out of the money?
No, not under those terms. We may be doing something like that, not realizing that, but no, we don't use a standard deviation. What we're really looking at is where should price not be able to go? Where can we say that we shouldn't see prices at? And then that's where we sell. And then we might even go up one strike price from there and live with that, just to get a little more premium if we think it's prudent. Remember, we're trying to be careful and realize that we have to take a risk at the same time, but we're using whatever we have at our disposal to place the best option position we can. So I hope that answers the question.
Okay.
You know, that's what we do. I can have Dane on again. He can explain with greater clarity, because what I'm doing is I'm giving him the indication. I'm saying this is where we are in the market, and then here's where I think you should consider, and then he takes that information and ultimately puts that all together and puts it into the actual place that he wants, you know, that we're going to finally put a position on. So if you'd like, Dwayne, we can have him on the show and again and have him cover that, even briefly, for people if they just want to hear, you know, get the questions answered directly, because I don't have all the answers to it. But I know what the indications are, and I know where the levels are that we shouldn't touch, et cetera. Those are the key things that we want to use to put a decent trade together. The options thing is really good. It can be really good, you know.
Alan has a question. He says, David gave me an opinion on CBR 6 months ago. Could he give me an update?
Okay, what is that?
CBR. That's some stock,
and that's,
I guess.
Cyber?
CBR, I don't know.
I think if I gave him an indication on it, it was... actually, can I ask him if I could do it right? Is it Cyber Inc.?
He said,
is
yes,
that
that's it.
Okay. What I gave him 6 months ago was that it had to be, that it was at a bottom. That the market was going to bottom in the month of September. And it actually made its actual absolute low by just a tick or so in August, 1 month earlier. And so we were talking about the market advancing off of that low. I mean, I don't remember exactly what I said, but I'm looking at the chart and I can see we would have called for a bottom in cyber. So is that what I told him? Can he confirm that for me?
He said yes.
Okay, so now the market has advanced decently off of this. We made a low. This is a very low stock. This is $2.71, and it went up to $4.78. You know, basically almost doubled, which is a very nice swing. So he's asking now, where are we now in this stock?
You know, whether it's a $2 stock or a $200 stock, a double is still a double.
Double is still a double, and, you know, there's no two ways about it. I completely agree. I can't, you know, we trade in larger, in those higher price stocks. We like it. We like the volatility and all that. They tend to be more volatile, but you're exactly right. A double is a double. Okay, so this stock on the way up had pulled back and made a bottom, an important bottom in December, and then it retested that bottom. These are reflected wave lows, and then recently put in a top, basically sort of a weekly chart in late January, and we've been going sideways to lower since then. The market has not broken its downtrend at all, and I would say if I had to give it just a general outlook on it, it's short-term bearish because of the weekly top. We've gone sideways for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks. That's quite a number of weeks to go sideways here, and yet they haven't done much damage on the downside at all. So I'm neutral overall. I'm neutral on the stock right here, and with a little bit more movement, I would be able to, you know, I don't have any spatial relationship or anything else on this stock right now, but it was a nice move up, and I will, if you want to continue to ask me about it, I'll give you some more opinions as we move into a little bit more time, but it really has gone sideways for quite a bit off of the weekly top. For those of you who have reflected wave, it called for that top on the week of January 30th, and that was the top. So they've gone sideways here. This is very good on stocks, and you can you'd be wise to start, as we always do, with the largest time frames and see where these markets are and then work with them. This market, just real quick, this particular stock at one point was trading at nearly $7. So it came down. It basically crashed. It came down really, really hard, and around the time that he had asked about it was right after that crash. So this bounce, in spite of the fact that it doubled the stock, is really an ordinary bounce, the kind of ordinary bounce you would get after a really, really powerful, sharp, and scary decline. That's what it has done here. That's basically all I have. I don't have anything else right now other than to say that, yes, it continues to move sideways. It has a slightly bearish tone to it because of the weekly top. I would put my overall rating at it at neutral at this point. I wouldn't tell somebody at this point to go long or to go short at this point. I would be waiting for a further indication here. So I hope that's somewhat helpful, Alan. I don't have maybe over the weekend or something I could put something together on the stock if others have an interest in it, and maybe we can make a forecast for where it would be in a period of time. But it does move. You know, if you stretch the stock out, it's a low price stock, and it does have some decent movement, which you don't see every day. One last thing, I want to go back to crude. We mentioned yesterday that crude had a daily bottom due on March 30th. And so we're now on March 30th, or today is March 30th. Anybody with reflected wave knows that. They're already starting to turn. I mentioned also yesterday something about crude. I can't remember what it was, but I mentioned that if we closed much below, I think it was 104.50 or something like that, they closed yesterday at 104.36. So that isn't really a close, you know, that isn't a decisive close below 104.50. So that puts the potential for the market on the upside. This is just off of a daily chart. So if you want to, you know, we'll talk about this Monday. This would be a multi-day advance that you would get off of this. So we have a combined thing here. We have a reflected wave bottom, plus we also have the market unable to close decisively below a spatial relationship level, basically 104.50 or whatever it was I gave yesterday. Sorry, I'm not exactly sure what it was, but very close to that, and starting to firm up. So I'm bullish short-term on the crude oil market. And I think that wraps it up real pretty-like, Dwayne.
Alrighty.
I mean, not a whole lot more to add right there. I appreciate the questions, though, and I will keep an eye on CBR, see where that goes. I hope Alan was in CBR and did at least as good as that Section 8 housing guy does on that trade. You're going to have to check that out, Dwayne, you and I. We could become Section 8 dudes.
Yeah. The opportunity is people will always need a place to live.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I would not feel comfortable renting really, really trashy places to people if that was my thing. I would rather, I almost prefer to have the government program there, have a little bit, like you said, they have a nicer house, you know. I don't want people to live in trash, you know. So
I think those places are going to get bulldozed at this point.
Which ones are?
Neighborhoods. I think they're going to get their, unless, you know, there's a lot of quality housing available for people. And I think the slumlord problem is going to get corrected by low housing prices and low interest rates.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting observation. That's an interesting observation that it could well be. We'll see. Well, anyway, and then just finishing up, the market's at a standstill here. There's nothing else really to do except for wait for 1406.50, so or higher. So that's what we're doing. We're actually in a long trade. This whole time we've been talking, Messenger Pro, we're just waiting just for something to happen here. We got long at 1403.50, and we're just waiting. So it's been a little bit slow here. You know? You know, I don't know. Is anything? Are there any people on the floor of the exchange anymore? Does anything, you know, it's all electronic. Where is everybody?
No, they still show up there every day. Ben still squawks the market every day.
Yeah.
There's people in the pit trading every day.
All right. Well, that's good.
You can actually turn on CNBC and they show pictures of the people in the pits with their colorful jackets, flashing the hand signals, and the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
So it's not like it used to be, but it's still there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've seen some pictures of some of the floor things. They show the, you know, things emptier than a high school reunion for progeria victims. I mean, seriously, progeria is an aging disease where people would never get to their high school reunion. All right, I'll shut up.
All right.
Okay, Dwayne, I guess I ought to just go now, huh?
Well, have a great weekend.
Thank you, Dwayne. You guys, too, thank you very much for the questions. And I'll plan on seeing you here on the Monday.
Okay.
Take care. Have a great weekend, Dwayne.
All right. Bye-bye.
See you later. Bye-bye.
I didn't notice what time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true, I'll be spending time with you. Every day's a new day in love with you. With each day comes
all
a new
right. Friday, end of the week. Glad to see it. The other day we talked about that Mega Millions lottery thing being at $500 million. It's now up to $640 million. By the time the rush happens this afternoon that they anticipate, that thing could be $750 million. Now, your chance of winning is 1 in 174 million, I think. Is that right? Your chance of getting struck by lightning is 1 in 300,000. So, anyway. that may be the biggest lot. That may be the biggest one in history. I don't know. I just don't know. If you won, you'd be worth more than Beyonce, Jay-Z, Tom Cruise, or Britney Spears. They just flashed that on the screen. So, I'm not encouraging you to go buy a ticket. Tuesday, it was $363 million. By Thursday, it had grown to $540 million. And at the moment, it is at $640 million. I don't know if they draw that tonight or tomorrow. I think it's tonight. So, you can see how often I play it. Because I'm not sure when they draw it. But anyway, sometimes the world just needs something to take their minds off their troubles. And, you know, for a buck, I guess it costs, I don't know, it used to cost a buck. I think some of the lotteries cost $2 now. But the last time somebody hit it was, they just flashed it and I missed it. This is the largest lottery jackpot in world history. So, The largest previous was $390 million. Again, I'm not encouraging you to play the lottery or buy a ticket. I'm just sharing the news. Drawing takes place tonight at 11 p.m. Eastern. Now, there is the chance... Well, let's see. No, there's only 164 million possible combinations. So with that much money in there... Odds of winning is 1 in 176 million. I'm thinking there has... That may not be a true statement, but I think that with that many tickets sold and all the possible combinations, but that doesn't mean all the combinations have been covered. Oh, well. This time tomorrow, we'll know, or you'll know, if you play. All right. It is the weekend. You know what that means. Spend a little quality time with your family. Of course, we'll see you in church on Sunday. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.